And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Wednesday, March 29, 2023. Sudanese military leaders entangle in a power struggle ahead of the formation of a civilian-led transitional government.
Both of those men see the other as their greatest threat. They don't see the people of Sudan, the protesters, the FFC, the international community.
And a European Union official in South Sudan says the signatories to the 2018 peace deal need to create a good environment for aid agencies.
This chance needs to be seized. If you want to use this chance, we stand by you, we help you financially, politically, even through providing security, as UNMISS is doing.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The relationship between Sudan's military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and paramilitary leader Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, known as Hemeti, is one of enemies and competition for power. That's according to Cameron Hudson, senior associate of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. As the two men engage in talks to merge their forces under one unified army, Hudson tells my colleague Nabil Biagio, both men pose a threat to one another and their enmity will continue to endanger an already fragile security and political and humanitarian situation in Sudan.
Both of those men see the other as their greatest threat. They don't see the people of Sudan, the protesters, the FFC, the international community, none of the other actors in this political drama that is playing out presents a threat to either of them except the other. And so we are all just backdrop to a struggle that is playing out between these two men and these two organizations about the future of Sudan. I think everything else is secondary. Even though we would like to think that the political transformation of the country is in fact what's happening, I think that we have to be skeptical of that and look at these two jockeying for position and survival. To a large degree, the tension that exists between the RSF and the SAF actually plays to both of their advantage. Because when you talk to the international community, the biggest fear that people have is that there will be a conflict between the SAF and the RSF, and that could unleash some kind of civil war that would be devastating for the country. And so there is a reticence and a fear to push either side too hard. And so when we see a buildup of forces, when you see visible tension between these two, when you see a mobilization by the RSF or the SAF, that causes people to step back and to perhaps relieve some of the pressure that they're trying to put on these forces. And ultimately, that only serves the interests of those two. And so I think to some degree, yes, there is a tension that exists between them, but they also benefit from having that tension there. And they are much better at playing on our fears in the international community than we are in playing on their fears of losing power and control.
And some observers say the two men may come to a realization that their interests are better served working together instead of engaging in a zero-sum game. How do you see it?
I think that what we're seeing is that both sides are trying to build alliances with external partners, right? And so it isn't a zero-sum game because if you look across the spectrum, Hemeti is traveling the region, trying to build alliances with Baezeyas or with Deby or, outside actors. Burhan is doing the same thing. They are engaged in their own separate foreign policy efforts to create leverage on their own. Both of them are doing the same thing with the FFC. We hear constantly, that both of them are issuing statements trying to associate themselves with the democracy movement in the country. They're trying to be more pro-democracy than the next. Yeah. And so what that suggests to me is that this is not a zero-sum game. They are trying to build alliances internally and externally to change the balance of power within the country in their favor. So it is not just one man against the other. It's a coalition of actors that they are trying to construct to pit against each other. And frankly, that's very dangerous, because if this unravels, then that could draw in outside actors to take sides backing either Hemeti or Burhan. That could draw in, that could divide the political opposition in the country, one side backing one side backing the other. This would be very dangerous. And I think that is the scenario that we can see playing out here.
That's Cameron Hudson, Senior Associate of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He spoke with Nabil Biagio here in Washington. An official with the European Union in South Sudan is urging the parties to the country's 2018 peace agreement to implement the deal. The Deputy Director General of the European Civil Protection and Humanitarian Aid Operation says the international community looks forward to hearing positive news about the implementation of the agreement. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Speaking to reporters today in Juba, Michael Ekola, Deputy Director General of the European Civil Protection and Humanitarian Aid Operations, says the government and parties to the peace deal need to redouble their efforts and remember the message of Pope Francis.
Without peace and security, this would be very difficult, and therefore I would like to use this opportunity to appeal to all that you should listen, please, to the words of His Holiness the Pope, who was here some weeks ago, and I think who made a vibrant appeal for the end of violence and for a peaceful future of the nation.
Kola arrived on Monday in Juba, where he met with various government officials, including First Vice President Riek Machar. He also led a delegation to the United States capital, Bentiu, to assess first-hand humanitarian needs in the area. Kola announced an €82 million donation to support food security and nutrition, protection of civilians, and education of children, among other areas in South Sudan. The money is part of the European Union's latest €331 million donation, or about $350 million, to the Horn of Africa. Kola says it's time South Sudan's leaders think about restoring stability in the country. He says the EU and the international community want to hear good news from the country's leaders about making headway on implementing the peace deal.
I think South Sudan has too many problems to go back to war. If that was to happen, it would be, a gross violation of the interests of the average citizen. And therefore, I can only tell you that on the European side, but also with all our international partners, we will try to pull all our weight behind every initiative that makes peace prevail and therefore ensure a better security and better future for the people.
Kola called on the signatories to the agreement to take this opportunity to put the country on the right track.
This chance needs to be seized. If you want to use this chance, we stand by you, we help you financially, politically, even through providing security, as UNMISS is doing. If you don't want to do that, we cannot guarantee you that we would continue to stand by you.
European Union Ambassador to South Sudan Timo Okonen says it's unfortunate that while the parties started implementing the new roadmap, they are already missing key important deadlines. Okonen urged the parties to get over their disagreements shortly after President Salva Kiir fired Defense Minister Angelina Teny, who is from the SPLM-IO, and swapped control of the Defense and Interior Ministries.
It's been reassuring to hear from His Excellency the President that indeed there's seriousness about, you know, the timelines of the transition, and that, you know, there would be not be further extensions. But this indeed requires renewed and redoubled efforts, you know, to bring forward all these different chapters of the peace agreement, security arrangements, of course, you know, to provide for security across the country, but also to, you know, to go forward with these essential processes of constitution making and preparing for the elections and the other chapters of the peace agreement.
The transitional period was scheduled to expire last month, but after the parties missed several deadlines to implement key chapters of the peace agreement, they agreed to extend the period by another 2 years. On Monday, while addressing lawmakers, executives and diplomats during the reopening of parliament, President Kiir said there would be no further extensions and said his administration is preparing for holding national elections that will usher in a new government. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on European matters, Germany may soon send troops to participate in the European Union military mission in Niger. A source told Reuters that the cabinet recently decided to deploy up to 60 soldiers in the country as part of EU effort to help Niger build up its force. A final decision on the matter is expected by the German parliament by the end of April. In December, the EU decided to establish a three-year military mission to Niger to help improve logistics and infrastructure. It would include at least between 50 to 100 troops, with maximum of 300 at a later stage. Berlin had been training Niger's special force with about 150 soldiers since 2018, but wrapped up the mission last year. Reuters notes that there are an estimated 1,100 troops in neighboring Mali, mostly near the town of Gao, where they gather reconnaissance for a UN peacekeeping mission. Some internally displaced South Sudanese women sheltering at Bor Stadium say they worry about the safety of their husbands when they go to look for firewood. The women allege that in the past, some men have been killed in jungle estate while searching for firewood. For VOA News, Viola Elias spoke to some of the displaced women and has this report for VOA from Juba.
Nana Akwe Aler, a woman's representative at the internally displaced person camp in Jungle State capital Bor, says women do not want to see their husbands risk their lives when they leave the camp in search of firewood.
As IDPs, because of insecurity, we cannot allow our husband to go and fetch firewood. They will be killed by the Murule. And you cannot allow your husband to die. You are aware of what to kill him. So that's the reason we don't blame them. So we don't blame them, but we know the decision is not favoring them.
Alier says the IDPs face other threats like child abduction, which she says was more rampant when women were still in their villages.
It is not like before when in the village. But with these shelters now, it is easy for the child to be abducted. But we thank God. He's protecting us. There's no more abduction from here. But now here, there is a government protection.
Speaking through a translator, 60-year-old IDPs Amor Ayuen says IDPs at the stadium face numerous challenges. Ayuen says many men who have taken up the responsibility of collecting firewood never return from the forest.
There's an issue, the shortage of men. So it makes every women to fear, actually, if your man go for fetching and anything happen, it causes a lot of worries. Secondly, they go as a group of a women. So they go, in case of any insecurity, all of them actually move at once from that place. They don't actually support men to go. They cannot record where there are many, and they know many have died on such occasions due to insecurity, but you cannot remember the number. But it's on a daily basis.
IUN is urging state and national officials to end insecurity in the area.
If our government is serious for it is actually to curb the insecurity, and we shall not have any challenges of. Secondly, if the government is not stopping it, let them provide us all the needs we want. But if the government wants us to work for ourselves, it should intervene.
Akwei Malek Akwei, a local chief at the Bori Stadium IDP camp, says insecurity remains the biggest threat long after they have complained to local and state authorities.
So we have been talking about it many times, but we have not seen any execution that had happened. So that's the big issue we are so worried about, and that's the major thing actually we can't control. The government told us to bring back our cattle. We brought them. Now they are raiding our cattle 4 times. We have complained to the government, nothing has been done.
Child abduction is one of the biggest threats that have harmed relations between communities in Jungle and the greater Bibore administrative area. Data released by Jungle State and Bibore administrative area authorities show that more than 100 women and children have been abducted over the last 6 months. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some women in Jonglei State confront Bor Municipality. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Jonglei State officials and civil society activists say they are working to resolve a row between female traders and Bor Municipality over land dispute. The activists say they are mediating between the women and municipality authorities. For VOA News, Manyang David Maya reports from Juba.
Officials say they want to see an end to the land dispute between the mayor and the women, which has caused tension in Bor over the last 2 weeks. They say the dispute started when the mayor of Bor Municipality, Aten Page, sold to a private investor land that had been designated as a vegetable market. The situation deteriorated when the Minister of Land, Housing and Public Utilities, Isaac Mamiruk, intervened to resolve the matter. Consequently, the Jonglei State Deputy Governor, Jacob Akindengdit, suspended Lands Minister Mamiruk. But on Monday, Jonglei State Governor Dine Jok Chagur intervened. He sacked Bor Municipality Mayor Aten Page and reinstated Lands Minister Mame Rook. He also ordered the land be given to Jonglei Women Vegetable Sellers Group in a gubernatorial decree, sparking celebrations among women vegetable sellers. Adul Gwit, one of the women celebrating on the streets of Bor, says Aten's removal is a great justice served to the women of Bor and their children who are in school amidst the current economic crisis in the country.
We thank you, our children, that we gave birth to, for removing that person and return our land. We love it so much. This place was given to us since 2009 by Kwal Manyang Juk. We have spent 14 years in it this year. And our children, whom we have been taking care of, some of them have gone as far as university.
Abuk Garang, another woman celebrating the removal of the mayor, says she is excited that a woman's voice has been heard in one of the rare occasions.
What we are doing is standing up for the right of that young girl who is still not married. We have been fighting for the right of that unborn girl. That is why we demand that piece of land. We have been fighting for the right of a woman.
Isaac Mamiruk, Jonglei Minister for Land, Housing and Public Utilities, says the sacking of Ateng Pech as Mayor of Boru Municipality solved the land dispute and wrangles among government officials.
It is already ended. There is an order from the governor cancelling all the legal allotment made by mayor and give land back to the rightful owners. And it was the ministry who will know who is the right person of that particular plot and who is not the right person. So the problem was already solved. Mayor was released.
Although the dispute appears to have been resolved, former mayor of Boru Municipal Council, Ateng Pech, says the move to relieve him will be regretted.
For sure, they will regret later. I gave that plot for the development. And the building that had been started there is the building of a three-story building, is a tower. And that tower is going to change the vision and the image of the city. And that tower is going to have a bang on it. And that bang will create job opportunities for the citizens of Boru. So that plot is supposed to be more productive than the remaining for all the umbrellas, because we cannot maintain the city with umbrellas.
Head of the Jonglei Civil Society Network, Bol Dengbol, calls on state officials to cooperate and put their differences aside to better serve the people of the state.
They have to work together for them to achieve what they want to achieve as a government, for them to change lives of the people of Jonglei and, of course, South Sudan in general. They have to work together. They must respect the agreement. What they are fighting for currently are simple interests, very simple and small interests that South Sudanese or the people of Jonglei State do not have anything to benefit from.
Land disputes are common in South Sudan. Yesterday, two people were killed in a land dispute in Rumbek, capital of Lagos State, as the government tried to demolish houses built illegally on land belonging to Rumbek National Secondary School. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor. In Boru.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan concluded a workshop that brought together some 60 civil society members in South Sudan's eastern equatorial state to strengthen their capacity and make their voice count when it comes to their role in implementing the country's 2018 peace agreement. The event, which was held in the town of Torit, was organized by UNMISS Civil Affairs Division. In a statement released today, UNMISS says, with permanent constitution being drafted to pave the way for elections in 2024, citizens, particularly those affiliated with civil society organizations, have an important role to play to make sure that their views are taken into consideration. Besides advocacy skills, the workshop also discussed the role of civil society in peace building and conflict management. That's according to UNMISS. It says it will continue to provide civic space and platforms for discussions and awareness raising on issues related to the implementation of the outstanding provisions of the revitalized peace agreement signed in September 2018. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris arrives in Tanzania Wednesday during her next leg of a week-long Africa tour after spending 3 days in Ghana. Diotas Bailey is the chairperson of the Tanzanian Editors Forum and the managing editor of Jamhuri Media Limited. He tells Douglas Mpuga the Tanzanians are excited about Harris' visit to the East African nation.
In total, we are so much excited to have this high-level delegation visiting Tanzania. We understand that the ties between the U.S. and Tanzania through this kind of visit will be growing high and higher.
The vice president, she has been in Ghana, and while there, she highlighted the role of women and women emancipation. The Tanzanian president is a woman, too. Do you think that's going to be beneficial to their discussions?
Without even a second of hesitation, I can say 100% her visit is going to be an impetus, a motivation to most women here in Tanzania to make sure that they also go for high offices. Because it has been a norm in most African countries where presidential candidates or presidents mainly have been men. And President Samia Suluhu Hassan has been setting the pace, let's say, for East Africa. She has become the first woman president for any East African countries. And along the line of history in Tanzania, she has been the first as well. So we think her visit and it is going to bring about the courage, to bring about the composure for people to see that, okay, President Samia, she's not alone. And other women are holding high offices in other countries, especially in a big country like USA. So it is an encouragement and a motivation to most women and men as well to see that we are not unique, because at a time, some people might be thinking that it's only Tanzania which has a woman president or a woman at such a high level. So I think this is an encouragement for the society in general.
President Samia has been hailed recently for her changes in the political landscape of Tanzania and giving room to opposition. Do you think that also may factor in as far as the region is concerned?
Sure, of course. Worldwide, it has been a concern that civic space was closing at a supersonic speed here in Tanzania in the past 7 years. But with the coming of President Samia, she set up a task force to review the political situation in the country. And she ordered the Minister for Information, Nappen Nnauye, to, in collaboration with the media stakeholders, to review media laws. And even today, we had a meeting, an annual retreat for editors here in Tanzania, graced by Minister Nape, where now the government has submitted a proposal to the parliament for media laws review. So we are seeing these signs, which I'm aware the diplomatic corps would be even notifying Her Excellency Vice President of these kind of changes which are affected by President Samia. And not just being affected, apart from looking at the legal ambit, she has gone a bit ahead by visiting the opposition party meeting on the 8th of March. So she's a kind of opening civic space, and this is what the world is looking for. And it's something to applaud.
That's Deodatus Balili, the chairperson of the Tanzania Editors Forum and the managing editor of Jamhuri Media Limited. He spoke with Douglas Mpuga from Dar es Salaam earlier today. And that's all we prepared for you on this Wednesday. We now leave you with Jamnazi Africa and the song I'm Not Sober. Listening to Jamnazi Africa and the song I'm Not Sober. I'm your host, John Tanza, who is sober on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. And on behalf of our producer, Kwame Wofori, and engineer, Kayla Williams, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
talk.